While Ukraine stands ready to engage in meaningful negotiations to end this war, including at the leaders' level, our red lines are clear and unwavering. There will never be any recognition, formal or otherwise, of Ukrainian territory temporarily occupied by the Russian Federation as Russian. Our land is not for sale. Ukraine will not accept any limits on its right to self-defense or on the size and capabilities of our armed forces. Nor will we tolerate any infringement on our sovereignty, including our sovereign right to choose the alliances we want to join. There is only one realistic path to ending this war. Russia must be compelled to retreat economically, politically, and militarily.
What in the hell? Yeah. You're talking about our unequivocal red lines. This land is not for sale. The only path is Russia surrendering, basically, and withdrawing. You can't make those kind of statements. Those kind of statements could be made from Russia if they wanted to, because they have the power to back it up. You cannot under any circumstances make that from here, because I mean, it's hard for me to even find a good analogy. It's like somebody who's just been beat to a pulp in a boxing ring and then lifting her finger up and saying, I demand you do something. And the other guy's going to look at him like, what are you? Maybe your head's been damaged or something. I don't know. Yeah, what do you make of this statement?
Yeah, it's Monty Python and the Holy Grail with the Black Knight, you know, okay. After he's had all of his arms and legs chopped
now
off.
That goes,
it's only a flesh wound. So
I know Gary's going to find it in a minute. It's going to show up. He always does.
It's hilarious.
But yeah, now that you mentioned it, and it's funny on the one hand, but it's just catastrophic on the other hand, because it's not an actor in special effects. It's going to be literal men getting their bodies blown to pieces by continuing to go forth in what this leader is requiring them to do, which is suicide on the battle.
And she doesn't even understand what actually Ukraine had previously agreed to. So right now in this current 28 plan, one of the point number six is that the armed forces of Ukraine will be limited to 600,000 personnel.
You can see, at least I think you can see on the screen right there, this is the point there that you're talking about. That's number six. And since you're on that, let's go ahead and talk about some of these, because there's a number of them, number of these points, which are just, I consider non-starter. That was going to be the first one right there. Number six is that, for the reason you've already mentioned, that Russia would never permit that. I mean, that's a huge number here. The next one I wanted to talk about here is number 10. The U.S. security guarantee will have the following caveats. It doesn't even matter. I can roll down and see what those caveats are. It's not going to matter, because here's the point. On what ever agree to we seem to have lost my picture. Can you still hear me?
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you.
Okay, I'll fix this in a second. But under what circumstance would Russia ever agree to accept a U.S. security guarantee when right now there is no such security guarantee? And the Russians can just take what they want on the battlefield with no security guarantee. So why is that even going to be considered?
Yeah, it would take the type of guarantee that Russia might entertain is that the United States presents a treaty that is approved by the House and Senate. And so that you've got actual U.S., it's part of U.S. law. But barring that, all they can do is look at the past history, where the West has consistently used these agreements as a way to lull Russia into a state of trust. And then they launch false flag attacks and other military operations. So, yeah, there's no foundation of trust that's going to have something beyond a, quote, U.S. guarantee. And again, the United States will receive compensation for the guarantee. What the hell does that mean? You know, Russia's going to pay the United States? Yeah, forget about it.
And so, okay, and I'm still working on my camera here. I'll get that fixed in just a second. Next one is number 14. frozen funds from the Russians will be used to help rebuild Ukraine.
Yeah,
what do you say?
That's all that $300 billion that have been frozen. That's Russia's money. They're going to say, you're not going to take our money and spend it as you wish. If we decide to do something in Ukraine, we'll make that determination. Give us our money back. But, you know, let me mention it as well, the preceding paragraph, 13, it said, quote, Russia's going to be reintegrated into the global economy. Okay? That's like somebody who was elevated from one of those arena football leagues, and they're now playing in the NFL, and now you get to come back and say, you know what? We're going to allow you to go back and play in arena football. And they're going, forget about it. You know, Russia being invited to return to the G8. Why would you want to be a member of that club when BRICS right now, in terms of per capita GDP and in terms of actual growth rate, surpasses G7 on every economic measure?
Oh. Yeah, what's not to like there?
Yeah, so here you got this nonsense about the economy, which reflects, I guarantee you, this particular paragraph, and maybe the next one, were had large input from Scott Bessent, the Secretary of the Treasury.
You mentioned that before, yeah, because he believes that, don't you think?
Oh, yeah.
He actually thinks, man, they really want to be back in.
They want to be part of
our
club.
Why would they want to be back into this where it's going to make them vulnerable again? I mean, why would anyone want to do that?
Yeah, it is just, it's not in Russia's interest. So, but you're absolutely right to point out the $100 billion that it's going to, that you're going to freeze, take Russia's money and then spend it on Ukraine. No. And then they also go on, remember, that the remaining frozen Russian assets are going to be invested in a separate American Russian vehicle. So that the United States is going to control part of the other $200 billion. I think the acronym for that is GTFO.
I'll leave it to people to Google that if they don't know. Okay, and then the next one I'm going to go down to.
I'm keeping it clean, yeah.
I appreciate that. We're going to go down to the next one here, but as soon as I talk about this, I've actually got a video to balance it right up because we're going to let the Russians speak for themselves on this one. Number 14, where number 21, where Zaporizhia and Kherson are going to be, the line of contact is going to be frozen. Now, this is interesting, Larry, because the CNN was reporting today that a lot of in the West were really upset at the United States on this because they basically, quote, give everything away to Russia that they want, as opposed to what you just pointed out here. And one of the things they point to is that in the Donbass, apparently that the deal is, like had been floated earlier in the war, that Ukraine would have to withdraw from the rest of the Donbass where they currently have troops there. I think there's like 11% or something like that remaining. And in exchange, then the Russian side would not press their issue forward on Kherson and Zaporizhia. That was responded to earlier today from the Russian side. Watch this. Nope, not that one, Gary. Sorry, the one of the general staff. We're going to come back to that one separate.
Since November 1st, we have liberated over 230 square kilometers of territory, bringing 13 settlements under our control. Comrade Supreme Commander-in-Chief, the formations and military units of the Joint Forces Group will continue to carry out their missions to liberate the Donetsk and Luhansk People's Republics, as well as the Zaporizhia and Kherson oblasts. As of today, we have captured over 4,000 buildings in the village of Konstantinovka. We continue to escalate our efforts and plan to capture most of the village by mid-December. We won't set specific dates, it's not important. In the Kupiansk direction, assault detachments of the 68th Motorized Rifle Division of the 6th Army have completed the liberation of the city of Kupiansk. So, everything completely finished? Exactly. The city is under our control. Individual, small, scattered enemy groups are being eliminated.
So if you're talking about you're going to freeze the conflict in Zaporizhia and in Kherson, but the Russians are saying, yeah, we've almost taken those already. We're going to continue moving into them. What do you make of that?
Yeah. No, the critical part of this whole line of contact, and notice Zelensky, that piece you played earlier, said several thousand kilometers. Sorry, it's 1,300 kilometers. You know, it's 1,300. That's not several thousand. But 1,300 kilometers, the line of contact stretching from the north to Kherson in the south. And, you know, Russia is now broken. The center part in Donetsk, Pokrovsk was really sort of a linchpin in the defense. Seversk and Lyman are the next that are going to fall. And once that's done, there are no solid defensive positions that had been built in between Zaporizhia and Kherson. Russia is going to move very, very rapidly. I suspect they will be on the Dnieper River in Zaporizhia and in Dnipropetrovsk by the end of December. It could move that quickly because and this is something that the West has continually denied. Oh, it's a stalemate. Oh, the Russians are moving so slow. Not this year, because you know what we didn't realize is the previous slow movement was a function that the Russians had not fully mobilized for war. They were conducting a special military operation. They did that initial mobilization in September of 2022. Then after that, they relied upon contract soldiers and recruits, conscripts, at about a rate of 30,000 a month. And so they'd build those forces up. And each of those forces would take 3 to 6 months to train. And so you've got people coming online over time. And as you build up that stagger, you know, month to month to month, by the start of 2025, all of a sudden now you got 750,000 ground forces that you can apply all along a 1,300 kilometer front. As compared to in 2022, when you had 125,000, you know the manpower difference, and you know what's capable with a larger ground force. So that's what we're witnessing now. It's that the culmination that is taking place in front of our eyes, that Russia has achieved the weight, the mass, the force, and Ukraine doesn't have anything to answer with it. And so it's just, this is like rolling a rock down a hill. It's just, gravity is going to take over.
Yeah, and let me just point out a few of the things that they talked about there. One of the things that they said, Volchansk has been nearly all taken. This is in the Kharkiv area in the north. So Russia has continued to move south. There's still a little bit. This is kind of some of the external suburbs, so not a lot. These are more like dachas here, but the majority of Volchansk has been taken. One of the biggest, in fact, the biggest claim that the general made there was that Kupiansk, he said, is now completely captured. So this area that had been in the gray zone, they're saying is now completely in the red zone, and that there's only some forested areas in between where Ukraine's forces still are in between. But he said that they have captured that, which is a major, major take. And then, of course, the other big one that we run down to, and really in between there, you see kind of to your point now, even all along this front line here, even in Dobrosheva here. This is, again, last 12 hours of advancements. Yompil, more here. Zanivka here, additional Russian territory. But then we get down to the big one here, which is in Pokrovsk. And now the city of Pokrovsk, and oddly enough, they still have not formally announced this, but there is nothing left. It's all yellow in the Pokrovsk at all. It's effectively gone. Now, these couple of areas here are still in the gray zone. I'm not sure why Russia hasn't announced this, but you see.
Actually, Danny, I just saw an announcement about 4 hours ago. They did.
Did they? So, okay.
Yeah. But you're right. Up until, 10 hours ago, they hadn't.
And so that's Pokrovsk and Mirnograd. Konstantinivka was another issue where the Russians are now moving in further in the south of that area. They're already in the southern areas of the city. And then we go all the way down into the Zaporizhia area. And you see that Russia is moving closer. This is the city of Zaporizhia here. They're continuing to move up the coastal area along this big lake, et cetera. And everywhere you want to mention, even down here in Vuliapolia is also in some problems. Literally everywhere you want to look is the bottom line here. So one wonders if that's part of what was motivating Zelensky to make this alarming statement that we're in this gray area here, led Putin with his general staff there on this same day in uniform. And I wonder if you can comment a little bit on if there's any subtle messages that included here that the Russians seem to be saying all this stuff you're seeing is now only going to pick up speed, and we're either going to get to the end state on negotiations or on the battlefield.
Yeah, no, exactly right. But it's not the assumption of the West that Ukraine and Russia are equal negotiating partners, that Ukraine actually has some leverage over Russia, that Ukraine has some things that Russia needs. Said no. I mean, this is more like the end of World War II, where the Soviets took over Berlin, and the Germans wanted to negotiate just with the West, but the Soviets said, "Niet, no, you're going to talk to us. We fought the bulk of this battle." So that's why, you know, we've had these, you know, variety of analysts making prediction. Oh, this will be a stalemate, 2027, 2028. No, it's not. This is anything but a stalemate. You just, it'd be one thing if we could point to training camps in Ukraine where new recruits are going in and, you know, going through basic training and then getting some advanced individual training. We're not seeing that because there's not a single place in Ukraine that troops can be safely trained without getting hit with a missile or two. So we're not seeing the training, but what we are hearing reports of, they grab people off the street, shove them to the front, slap a uniform on them, give them a gun. It's not even sure that they know how to load the rifle, much less disassemble it and clean it. And what they're out there for as meat. And yet the battle has shifted in such a way that it's not troops assaulting. It's drones doing the assault. And the Russians now have a decisive advantage. Ukraine had some advantage back in 2023. No longer. That's gone. And so, you know, I think that this Army Chief, the U.S. Army Chief of Staff and the Secretary of the Army were both in Kiev yesterday talking to Zelensky, maybe trying to talk some sense into him. But even if Zelensky comes out and embraces this 28-point plan, it still means that the United States and Russia are going to have to sit down and hammer out the details. And while they're talking, Russia's going to continue to advance.
Well, and let me just underscore that point, because in that same engagement with the general staff, Putin himself said this.
I'm sure, confident that all the things that we've spoken before and the things that we're going to discuss today in private, I'm sure that all of that will be carried out in full as we've agreed. And so, like I said, we need to do this to achieve all the goals of the special military operation in your parts, in your areas of responsibility.
Yeah. So, in your areas of responsibility, that's all of the territorial.
Confident that all the things that we've spoken before and the things that we're going to discuss today in private, I'm sure that all of that will be carried out in full as we've agreed.
And yeah, that's that. And so, you tell me if you think it's any different, but I think that he is talking about the June 14th, 2024 terms in their entirety. And as I read that, no room for negotiations on those bottom lines. Do you see it different?
No, you're exactly right. And in fact, what he then subsequent to the June 2024, he said earlier this year, I think it was in March or April, said, look, we're now making advances into new territories, particularly into Dnipropetrovsk and into Kharkiv. And he said, look, if they don't take the deal that's on the table, we will not rule out that we'll hold new elections in each of those territories that we've taken and give the people a chance to choose whether they want to become a part of the Russian Federation. And I think that also includes Nikolaev and Odessa. So, look, but this thing is going to end, I believe, with Russia in control of Odessa, with full control of the Dnieper River from Kiev on down, with Dnipropetrovsk, as well as Sumy and Kharkiv becoming parts, new parts of the Russian Federation. There is because again, this is playing against this backdrop of this incredible corruption that is now being.
Yeah, can't minimize that.
It's not just the 100 million. I mean, again, as I mentioned, my business partner submitted a whistleblower complaint on behalf of a number of Ukrainians. $48 billion.
I've seen that reported since you made that announcement on our channel. I've seen that reported elsewhere, so that has been corroborated.
Yeah, and it's been investigated now by the Criminal Investigative Service within DOD. Now, here comes the problem. In theory, if we had an honest system in this country, in the United States, these people would be prosecuted, the members of Congress, senior members of Congress, both Republicans and Democrats, who have taken money, some of that $48 billion, it's found their way into their bank accounts and bank accounts that are overseas. But I think because of the number of members of Congress who are involved and because of some of their high-profile status, that this could get swept under the rug. But there's still the issue of who's going to pay the price, who'll be the scapegoat in Ukraine. Because $48 billion, that's a good chunk of change.
Yeah, that's an understatement. And I don't know if there is money involved, but there is also, and we can't fail to acknowledge this as well, because the European Union and many European states are also a party to this madness. And I'm going to show you something from yesterday from, I know the look on your face is going to happen, Kaja Kallas, the foreign diplomat for the European Union. It was asked by a reporter about this 28-point peace plan. And the reporter says, do you think that Trump's peace plan has a chance to actually work? And she said no, and then added this.
In order to end this war, you need the Ukrainians and the Europeans also to agree to those plans. So, of course, Putin could end this war immediately if he just stopped bombing civilians and killing the people. But we haven't seen any concessions on the Russian side. We welcome all the meaningful efforts to end this war. But like we have said before, it has to be just and lasting. That also means that Ukrainians, but also Europeans, agree to this.
What one wonders, Larry, if it was Estonians, which is where she's from, who would pay the price in blood if we continue the war, or if they would live if with an agreement, if she would have a different perspective. What do you think?
Well, yeah, but again, Russia is not even, they don't wake up in the middle of the night worried about Estonia, Latvia, or Lithuania. I mean, Estonia is what, 3 million people?
No, clearly. But she's not worried about holding that position means more Ukrainians are going to die unnecessarily. Yeah. And one wonders if it was her countrymen who would die unnecessarily, if she would have a different viewpoint. Because to me, it's unethical and immoral to be so cocky about something that can't succeed when somebody else's people are going to die as a result.
Remember that $48 billion I talked about? It got routed through Estonia.
Okay. So, didn't know that.
Yeah. Follow the money.
Makes a lot more sense now.
Follow the money. You're right. There's absolutely all the Ukrainians are for these people is a credit card, a way to make money, man. They're a profit center. And if the Ukrainians die, who cares? They're just Ukrainians, a bunch of misconceived Slavs. I mean, that's the attitude of these people towards them. And, it's a horrific account. You know, I did speak again with the former Prime Minister Azarov, and he corrected me because I said, look, I've been quoting you. And he said, no, let me clarify. He said it was in 1991, when you had the collapse of the Soviet Union, that you had 52 million Ukrainians. He said by 2014, that number was down to 43 million. But he said now it is 19 million. So yeah, again, you've lost well over 60% of the population. And most of them, thank God, most of them are still alive, but they're living outside of Ukraine. They're in Europe. They're in the United States.
But you know that. I mean, they may be alive somewhere, but they're not in Ukraine. And along with those who have died and fled the country, the population, I forget the term, the population generation ratio, which has got to be 2.1 to maintain the population of a country, is 0.98. So it is half, meaning they're dying even after this war is over, unless a lot of these people come back. And I don't know what they're going to come back to, but they're literally killing the country with what they're doing here in the U.S.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And that's the human tragedy of this. And for what? Again, Russia was not seeking to take over Ukraine. Russia had an arrangement with Ukraine. They were partners. It was the West constantly using Ukraine as a leverage, as a cudgel against Russia. Going back to, I spoke with Vasily Provorich, Prozorov. He was a former SBU colonel. He became a Russian asset in 2014, defected to Russia in 2018. But he was there, he started with the intelligence service back, I believe, in 1998, 97. And, he was telling me all about how the CIA, had set up offices in both the GUR and SBU. So the effort of Western subversion against Russia using Ukraine as a tool, it's been going on for 30 years. And for what purpose? Primarily, the West wants to control the gas, the oil, the gold, the uranium, the precious rare earth minerals that Russia controls now, and then to use Russia as a way to further weaken to go after China. And Russia's finally awakened. They said, no, we're not going to play that game, and they're looking to the east, not the west. You have Glenn Deason on your show from time to time.
Yesterday, as a matter of fact.
Yeah. So Glenn, I just found out today. I just talked to him, in fact, an hour before coming on your show. He wrote a book 5 years ago, I believe, in which he predicted that Russia was going to turn to the east and turn away from Europe. I mean, as he described it, I said, Glenn, you're pretty good at your job to make a call like that. And he said at the time when he made it, he was roundly criticized as, oh, you're a fool. He was talking about the fact that Russia and China would be turning into looking for an alternative to the U.S. dollar. And he said that people were treating him like he had three heads. But that, in fact, he, to his credit, he saw the dynamics, the way things were headed, and he wrote it in a book. So he doesn't get to just take credit for it. Oh, yeah, I said that, but I didn't write it down. But I thought it. No, he wrote it down. And so I said, in my conversation with him, he'll post it probably tomorrow. I told him, put the link in your description because people ought to go read that because, buddy, you made a good call.
I'm definitely going to talk to him about that next time as well. And speaking of some of that, let me ask you, there's one final point. Gary, if you can put that 28-point plan back up there too, because one other issue I think bears some discussion here, and that's point number 28, which is the last one, which basically says, once agreed to, all the parties have to withdraw to certain lines. This is probably going to be a silly thing, but do you see any possibility that Russia will withdraw anywhere?
Yeah, my favorite line on that is two ways, no way and no way in hell. So, yeah, not going to happen. And it's, this whole agreement hinges upon it's going to be headed by Donald Trump. anybody that's betting that Donald Trump is going to be around 4 years from now to enforce this, I got a bridge to sell you in New York. So this is, this unfortunately is, again, it's a divide, it's a framework. It gives Russia and the United States something to talk about. And while they're talking, the war is going to continue and the situation for Ukraine is going to become more dire with each passing day.
And so let me just ask you, where do you think this goes? I mean, because if it would take months to develop, to negotiate this out, if everybody was willing to talk about it.
Yeah.
I'm not sure that Ukraine has months. So are we going to get to the point to where at some point Russia just says, oh, by the way, here's my terms, take it or leave it, because otherwise we'll just rule with what we got here and y'all can figure it out.
Yeah, no, it'll be presented in the same way that the Soviets presented the Germans the surrender terms back in May of 1945. Russia, by controlling the Dnieper River, will cut off Ukraine's ability to export grain or anything else. A lot of that is normally transported down the river. Russia will probably start confiscating that. So it will have that as leverage. It will have control of Odessa. So Ukraine will no longer have a Black Sea port. So it's going to be entirely dependent upon Russia. And there's some say, oh, yeah, but you know, the Ukrainians, the Nazis are going to fight an insurgency and it's going to plague Russia. Hello, people. Read some damn history. 1999, the West launched a terrorist war against Russia, known as the Second Chechen War. That went on for 10 years. Russia eventually defeated these Western-backed radical Islamists, and they, you know, it was very violent. But what you have today is what the Russians demonstrated is, despite that war with the Muslims, these Muslim extremists, you've now got those Muslims in Chechnya who were represented by people like General Abdi Aludinov, who are staunch Russian patriots. Russia rebuilt the entire Chechen region, and it's got the largest mosque in the world, is my understanding, in one of the cities there. And not only have the Chechens become nationalists, Russian nationalists, but they're also out there leading, you know, on the front lines of the battle. So Russia has demonstrated that it can take a situation like, oh, you got all these Nazis running around the Ukraine. It can deal with it.
It's yeah, I've actually heard from a separate source that claims that Russia has already baked in, I guess, an initial five-year program to have to deal with that. They expect that on the backside, and they've already resourced it. So how that's going to work out.
Yeah, the point is they've done it before. We're pretending, you know, look at us. We couldn't even fix the situation in Afghanistan or Iraq. Good God. We our arrogance is going to be the death of us.
Maybe sooner than we think. But listen, this is another one of those where we're unintimidated and uncompromised to bring people the truth, no matter what it is. And this is one you've been talking about for a long time, and it's now starting to really play out and manifest on the ground. You talked about Glenn Deason, but you've got a track record of your own that's out there also written down. And I suspect that one day these kind of statements that you make here today are also going to be proven right. People can, in fact, go to sonar21.com to see some of that stuff and to keep up with you as we're talking through here a lot, especially some of the stuff you've written after your travels through Russia and what people need to know. So but we recommend people go in there. But in any case, thank you very much, Larry. We always value what you have to say here, and thank you for coming on today.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate it.
And we appreciate you too, guys, as well. Just a reminder, we are on podcast. You don't have to get us on the video. Sometimes if you're on the road and you need to just listen, don't miss an episode. Apple Podcasts, Spotify Podcasts, Addict, type in Daniel Davis Deep Dive, and you'll find us there. Or if you prefer the written version, and if some of your friends would like to read instead of just the video, I know people have different ways they like to get their media. Don't let them miss out either. DanielDavisDeepDive.substack.com. And you will find all of us there, to include the Shirt Johnson. So thank you very much, folks. We appreciate you, and we will see you very soon on the Daniel Davis Deep Dive.